Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the Drink Talking with the Thinking Drinkers, Ben McFarland and Tom Sandon. And mistress of wine, Sam Capon. All the booze news and views. From absinthe to Zinfandel. Chin chin, what?
Hello, listeners, and welcome to our podcast, It's the Drink Talking, another half an hour-ish of liquid entertainment, liquid learning.
Absolutely.
Down, your lug holes. My name's Tom Sandham. I am hosting today. I am a spirits expert, for those who've never listened to our podcast before, and I'm joined, as ever, by my two colleagues. To my right is Ben McFarland, the beer man.
Hello, everybody. How are you doing? You all right, Tom?
Yeah, I'm all right. How are you doing, Ben? What, have you had a lovely week?
I've just come straight from the doctor. I had my 40-year-old checkup.
I too have had one of those.
Yeah, but they
give you years ago.
Have a bit of an MOT.
Really, I was surprised you had to have it yet.
Well, I've had a birthday since I saw you, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, happy birthday.
Thanks.
How old are you?
40-something.
40-something. Your age plus four, I think.
Oh, okay.
What?
I didn't know you were as old as that.
I look good, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah,
you look
thanks very much.
Beautiful.
That's very good.
Thanks. Sam. That's Sam Capon, our wine expert. Hello, Sam. How are you? You all right?
I'm good. A bit sweaty. Got lost on the way here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm calming down. The hot flushes are going, which aren't related to being 44 yet. But no, very good, actually. Feeling perky.
Good.
Ready to do my tasting segment today.
Yes, you are tasting. Ben's doing a legend.
What
it's
you
going
doing?
To be amazing. I'm doing the spit or swallow. So I guess we'll just
let's crack on.
I'm going to start with my swallow. It's been a good week all round for drinking. Yes, because we're into February.
Yay!
So all those dry January dickheads.
Bang on the door of pubs going, open up.
They're there. Well, we do. That could have been my swallow, the end of dry January, but it's not. But well done, everyone. If you did abstain during January, then hard lines, but at least it's over. Please don't binge.
And I bet they're slimmer.
They might be, but don't binge now it's done. I understand you were out with a dry January. Were you doing your Italian tasting and someone was on dry January?
Yeah, he fell off the wagon absolutely spectacularly.
That isn't really the way to come off the dry January.
No,
less, drink better, Ben. That's what we say, isn't it? And that means you can not give up
alcohol. Did you give him grief?
It was my brother-in-law. We did this Italian street food course on a Friday night. It was really good. It was really good. Although the street food they made us cook was, as far as I could tell, an omelette.
Which, well, that's well-known Italian dish.
They were sort of saying, and then you get the eggs and you whisk them, and then what you do, you sort of put the liquid into the pan, and I'm thinking this is very similar to an omelette.
Or scrambled eggs.
An omeletto.
Yeah. But we went for drinks afterwards, and the people in the bar, there was a big group of lads in the bar who were the Red Arrows.
Mm. Oh, sexy.
They were all right.
I think they're quite sort of.
They're quite straight laced, yeah.
Characters. Aren't
they? But the concept of the thought is sexy. Mm. They're the guys who. Fly little planes, right?
Yeah.
That's what they do. I said to them, are you the guys that fly little planes? And they were like, yeah.
In fact, years ago, when I was a girl, I stayed in a hotel, possibly in Devon, where the Red Arrows were staying, and got stuck in a lift, which potentially is where my hatred of tubes comes from. Which is why I'm hot and sweaty today, because I was late and had to walk.
And got a taxi.
Then had to get a taxi.
And gave a £5 tip on a £5 fare, accidentally.
Which I did get back.
Yeah, good. Good for you.
I did laugh in his face and say,
No. Your face.
I gave you a tenner to pay for my fare, not to buy you a beer as well.
No, I'll give you my change. So it could have been that. It could have been our shows, Ben. We'd had a show in Canterbury this
big
week.
Big thanks to the people in Canterbury.
It was nice. There were a few people in the audience who had a bit to drink. In fact, one of them too much, arguably. I should give some context here. When Ben and I did a radio interview with BBC Radio Bristol, to name and shame, the woman on the other end of the line described me as a Jimmy Carr lookalike, which Ben thought was hilarious. Well, in Canterbury, they described him as a Paul Hollywood
lookalike. So, whilst I was in the middle of a comedic monologue, a woman in the front row, who I think had been drinking all day, just apropos of nothing, just went, "You look like Paul Hollywood."
Yeah.
And what then, do you do with it? I bet you don't
it's
get
not
hecklers
a heck,
very
it's
often.
Not it's not really a heckle. It's just a comment. I mean, she later on did describe us as MFs. I'm not prepared to say that one on the podcast. Mm. She just said, "You're
MFs."
MFs.
Now, if you're a MILF...
Yeah,
no.
Mother Funkers.
Yeah.
That's what she was called.
Okay.
Yeah. So she was just she was
I was
just
going
an idiot.
Somewhere else with that.
Yeah, we're not MILFs.
No. Right. Thanks for that, Canterbury.
Has anyone had to be escorted off the premises ever for a chunder?
Not in our show. No, people generally aren't inebriated. That's the whole point of our educational approach, is that people drink less, drink better.
So
but
what
that's
is
not
your,
my swallow. No, my swallow.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
There's so many things. There's Glenmorangie Spios. They launched that this week, which is a private edition from the Glenmorangie guys, and I was in a private members bar drinking very expensive whiskey.
Oh, here we go.
Yes. I would have bought some in for you, but you are peasants.
Members being an operative word.
Yeah, they were actually quite. I'm not going to go into that. But yes, you're right, Ben. You're not far off the mark. Could have been tequila. Bacardi bought Patron for $5.1 billion.
Yeah.
But there's an agave shortage, so it wasn't tequila, because that really would be my spit. And Ben and I are going to Mexico.
Together?
Yeah, we're going together. Well, because.
You don't need spirits.
That's true. Ben doesn't. Where are you coming? Well, he's coming.
I don't know where I'm going.
Just to hold my hand.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll talk about that as a spit or swallow, depending on how the agaves are doing in a couple of weeks' time. But my swallow is actually some old dude. It's just an old dude. And 105-year-old, so he is pretty old.
Good
and
effort.
His name's Jack Reynolds. And I know, Sam, you've seen this story in the press today. Now, I picked it up from a local newspaper, and this 105-year-old was abseiling. The video is on the Derbyshire Times site. Please go and check it out. It's less impressive than you might think when I say an 105-year-old abseiling. He's sort of going up and down a rope in a warehouse being pulled up and down. Still, he is 105. In itself, the story rang a bit of a bell. Jack Reynolds, an 105-year-old, doing something interesting. But it turns out, and this is why it rang a bell, because in 2014, this same pensioner was in the Daily Mail, and he was celebrating becoming the oldest ice bucketeer. So I knew I recognised this.
What's an ice bucketeer?
You know when they did the ice bucket challenge?
That's dangerous.
This old boy did it with just in his underpants, in Union Jack underpants. So he's got form. And what I liked about the Derbyshire Times was they've obviously... This is something I've experienced of doing as a local journalist. They found this old guy who does things occasionally, and they've just made sure they stay in touch with him. Because now and then...
But without killing him.
Yeah.
Don't get him to do anything.
Is he still alive? Let's see what he's done this week.
So what is... oldest age of whoever's lived the longest?
Oh, that was talking about that on the radio the other day.
Who's the oldest person in the world?
Who was the oldest person? What is the greatest...
Well, I don't know, but I tell you what, I bet you they've got there because they were drinking, because the reason that Jack's relevant is because he drinks whiskey every day.
How much, I wonder?
He has a glass with his cup of tea. A glass of whiskey every day. And it's that he puts down to his fortitude and his courage and his long life. So Jack is actually celebrating the fact that he has a glass of whiskey and he does all these amazing things. And this story, I mean, the first story with the ice bucket challenge got picked up by the Daily Mail as well as the local press. This one's been picked up, this abseiling story with Jack, 105, so a few years on, by the drinks press and by the Metro as well. So, I mean,
Well done, Jack. In the autumn of life.
I mean, he is unlikely to last much more than 2 or 3 years, let's be honest. So I think he needs to up the risk factor.
Okay, well,
because the abseiling is all very well.
Abseiling
is essentially walking upper wall.
Well, he's not. You see, this is why you need to see the video.
Really?
He's just dangling off, isn't he? Yeah.
And being pulled up and down. He does other things as well. The oldest person to ride a non-inversion roller coaster. It's called the Twistosaurus at Yorkshire's Flamingoland.
That sounds dangerous.
I mean, I haven't been to Yorkshire's Flamingoland. It could be a very safe place, but some of the regional theme parks do leave a bit to be desired in the safety. Not Yorkshire's. That would be slanderous or...
Libelous.
Thank you, Ben. And when he was 104, he became the first person to receive a first tattoo. The oldest person to receive a first tattoo.
Do we know what?
Jacko, 1604-1912, inked on his shoulder. Jacko. He was also flown in a tiger moth and he did the ice bucket challenge. So it sounds like Jack's a bit of a dude and he drinks whiskey every day. Whiskey is brilliant. So that's my swallow.
I would like to caveat that with the fact that if you are drinking a whiskey every morning with your breakfast, you should make it a very small...
One
serving,
yeah. Right?
Yeah,
indeed.
Exactly. Speaking of which, as well, a lot of people who live a long time either seem to put their longevity down to something like whiskey, or often I find reading these things, no children.
That is a surefire guarantee for long life and happiness, as well.
Don't
we all
have
know.
Kids, kids.
There you go, listeners. Bit of advice, life advice: don't have kids. No, they're great, aren't they? We love our kids. Should they be listening to this ever later in life? So on to my spit, and my spit in the face of our exuberant new drinking for February is actually a story about abstinence, but only for women. And only for women in Sri Lanka. So it's quite niche. But
Can I say? I think I've read this story as well.
Well, you mentioned something about the Sri Lanka thing, but I don't know if you've got quite the full story.
Did they
story.
Change the law, then change it back
they
again?
They did. So the finance minister wanted to bring to an end a four-decade-long ban on women buying alcohol. And days after he made this announcement...
He backtracked, didn't he?
No, he didn't. He stuck to his guns, but the leader of the country is either prime minister or the president. He suggested that they had to go back on that. So he reinstated the ban. From tomorrow, the minister's order will be rescinded, said his office.
So they're not allowed to buy...
They're not allowed to buy alcohol.
And I think maybe you'll work with it either.
No, they're not allowed to work in the industry. We'll get to that. Well, it's not really that thunderous, is it? Let's be honest. But it's a 39-year-old law, and they were trying to strike sexist bills from the statute. So they had all these good intentions, and the president apparently has been talking a lot about being in favour of women being more empowered, but then suddenly backtracked under pressure from the Buddhists, interestingly. And I always think of Buddhists as quite chilled out characters. I didn't think they'd wade into something like this, but I think that the alcohol has touched
the nerve. Fans of the
so when it came to more people drinking or buying alcohol, I mean, they can drink, that's the thing, they just can't buy it, which seems
just crazy in the 21st century that such gender inequalities still exist. So where was it in the Middle East last year? They can now drive a car on their own. It's like to think that wasn't actually legally allowed. And I saw as well that Formula One grid girls have gone.
Well,
is that because they're just not as good though?
No. The grid girls, not the.
The grid girls, I thought you meant the drivers.
I was listening to this on the radio, people writing in, emailing and calling and just going, you know, it's political correctness gone mad. But no one pointed out that it just looks shit.
They're
talking about denying women the right to work. It's sexual
objectification of women.
The people who run Formula One have decided this looks shit, so we're sacking you. Yeah. In the same way that any company can sack their employees.
This is an unnecessary expense.
And also, just if you look at Formula One in general, just the way they spray those bottles at the end, it's quite phallic as well.
1970s, I think, isn't it?
Quite phallic. I think it was indulgent. Yeah.
But it's just kind of, you know, look at my big bottle of spraying everywhere.
I've just won the Formula One.
You idiots. It's not even a sport. Just driving around
It isn't a sport. No. I mean, back to this Sri Lankan issue, I do think it is strange that there are parts of the world, and Sri Lanka is a place you'd go on holiday, and my wife would expect to be able to buy a drink if she was on holiday. So
of course,
they
must be able to buy booze.
Well, I don't know if there are... Actually, that's a good question. I don't know. But, I mean, the president described women as having impaired decision-making abilities, which is... pretty ballsy stuff, I have to say. But, it does raise a lot of questions, and it just got me thinking, should women really be drinking? And are they onto something, Sam? Are the Sri Lankans onto something? Should we do this in the UK, Ben? Crucially, this was one of the questions I had to jot this down. Does it mean men now have to do the shopping? And does the ban impact on shoe sales?
On shoe sales?
Yeah, anyway. But seriously, women can actually drink the stuff there. But they can't actually work in alcohol, which if you think of all the women in the wine industry, the beer industry, and I was having to think about the women in the spirits industry. Joanne Moore, who's the Greenalls gin distiller, exceptional distiller, one of the world's best. Lorena Vasquez at Zacapa, Joy Spence at Appleton Rum, Elizabeth O'Neill, she's the master taster at Woodford Reserve. And women, scientists have argued, have better tasters. So just think, wait a minute, this is like, if I'm a bloke in Sri Lanka buying booze, I want to buy the best booze, and you're telling me women can't work in this industry. It's massively restricted.
Does Sri Lanka have its own booze industry? I mean, do they make beer? Do they make?
They do make beer. Yeah,
yeah. And my favourite Sri Lankan beer is the, it's the big one out there.
That one.
The Sri Lankan. It's got bubbles in it. Yeah.
It's got an elephant on the front, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's got an elephant on it.
Yeah. Is it Tusker?
No, that's Kenya.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what the Sri Lankan beer is. Apologies, listeners, but I will bet my bottom dollar that it's got some kind of animal on the leg.
I don't want your bottom anywhere near my beer. Yeah. Thank you very much. So, jokes aside,
yeah, that's a big
sexism
big
aside,
fat spit from me.
Yeah, and from all of us. So there we go. That's the Spittle Swallow.
It just seems a bit daft.
Women, start fighting back in Sri Lanka.
I'm going to fight back right now.
Do it. Let's start a campaign.
Let's just start shoplifting. Let's just start shoplifting because they're not technically buying it. They're just nicking it.
Yeah.
Like it.
So that's my Spittle Swallow. Hope you enjoyed that, listeners. Hope it enraged you in some way and makes you want to look more into that story. Or just have a drink. Maybe just have a drink while you're listening to us moan about shit. But that's the Spittle Swallow. So now it's time to have a drink this end. We're going to have something from Sam. It's time for a wine tasting, Sam.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is a podcast. It's the Drink Talking.
Yay! Okay. Right, so today we are going to try two white wines. So they're the same grape, but from different countries. And it's Riesling.
Right, before you start, I'm so pleased you brought Riesling in. Because I really like Riesling, but whenever I seem to buy it, I get the wrong fucking Riesling. Why are they mucking about with it?
Well, what do you mean?
Right, because there's a Riesling that is very, very minerally and dry.
Yes.
And I like that. And then there's another Riesling, which is sweeter than a puppy in a dress. It is just unbelievably different. Why is that?
What's the Riesling for this?
Tom, you're too good. So the thing with Riesling, it looks like it's pronounced Riesling, potentially, but it's Riesling. I say Riesling.
Okay.
Yeah, because you imagine the Germans, Riesling. If you say Riesling, it doesn't sound quite as good.
Quite as good.
Careful.
So going back to Riesling, it's grown all around the world, and we've got one from Germany and one from Australia. They are both dry, but the thing that is really confusing about Riesling, say, for example, you have a Chardonnay or a Sauvignon or anything like that, they're generally always dry. Mm. But the thing with Riesling, it's an aromatic variety. It's got a lot of what are called monoterpenes, which are like flavour compounds, which are kind of floral. And what happens is they can be very, very dry or they can be sweet. And the labels do try and give you a steer. For example, in Germany, it might say trocken, which means dry. And in New Zealand or Australia or the New World, generally, they've got a little bit of residual sugar in them, a bit of sweetness, a little bit. But some are very, very tight and racy. And unfortunately, you get basically bugger all on the bottle about it. Some might say good for a curry or something, which might suggest it's got some sweetness in. But unfortunately, it's very hard to know if it's dry or sweet when you pick up the bottle. In the New World, they don't really tell
you. That is, especially given that the bottles are taller, so there's more room to write on them.
Yeah, you think it works. Yeah, so generally aromatic varietals, good point, are bottled in these flutes.
So you get
Burgundy bottles, which are the ones that are kind of more curvy. Then you've got the Bordeaux bottles, which claret tends to be in, and Cabernet Sauvignon and so on. And then you get these lovely flutes. So let's taste the first one. We've got two, as I said, Rieslings, one from Germany, one from Australia. They're both from Sainsbury's. This one,
I like this because it says, I'm going to preempt what you're going to say, but it's called loosen.
Yeah.
And you have to loosen the top. So it's got loosen written around the top of the neck.
It's like an instruction.
It's good, isn't it?
It's basically Dr. Loosen, Riesling 2016.
Dr. Loosen.
Dr. Loosen.
Dr. Loosen those pants.
That's another good point, Ben. So basically, Riesling are known for being low in alcohol, and this one I think is 8.5.
Oh, we've drunk beers stronger than that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a bonus then.
So it is. If we're trying to kind of, you know.
So this is the German one.
So this is the German one. Let's have a read of the back label. A crisp, fruity, and refreshing Riesling from the mineral-rich slate soil of the Moselle Valley, which is the region in Germany most famous for Rieslings. They've got these very, very, very steep soils. And because Germany's very cold, the slate sort of retains the heat, and you have these south-facing slopes so that the grapes can ripen. But they still only get to 8.5. And as it said, it's an ideal companion to mildly spicy stir-fried dishes and Indian curries, or simply serve it as an aperitif.
Okay, now that's when I smell that, again, sweet is not a smell, but it promises sweetness. And
I know what you mean.
8.5%, I kind of feel like the higher the alcohol content, the sweeter it's going to be. So there must be a lot of sugar in these grapes.
Well, no, I think what it is because it's so cold, they don't ripen mega, mega well because it's the sugar in the grapes that get turned to alcohol. So what they can do in some German wines is chapsalize. We actually add sugar in with the grapes before you ferment the wine to bring the alcohol levels up. So it's so cold. And Riesling, I think, as a grape, is generally not one that produces high alcohol wines. So even this one from Australia is only 12%.
So it's actually entirely the opposite. They don't have but it's okay to add that sugar.
Yeah, you legally can. Most places you can't chaptalise. Mm. But in Germany, the whole thing with Riesling, and why it's slightly complicated thing is, you know, the rule of thumb, they're light, they're floral, they're sort of aromatic. Mm. But in Germany, they tend to be a bit more kind of floral.
Okay.
And in Australia, they're more lime and lime blossom, and they are generally drier, and they can be really searing, really crisp and tight. So the idea that all Rieslings are sweet is completely wrong. And they have these ridiculously convoluted sort of wine laws in Germany where they've got like different quality levels. You've got QBA and QMP, and the QMP wines, which are the top levels, which I don't think you can chaptalise in, they have things written on them like Cabernet or Spätlese or Orschlese, Beer and Ausch Laser, Ice Vine, Trockenbeer and Ausch Laser, and they all relate to the sweetness. And by the time you get to the end, they're pudding wines.
Right, okay. Because I was going to say, this so at first, when you get it in the mouth, it's quite rich and it feels a bit like a dessert wine.
But it does
but
feel
then
a bit,
it really it finishes very dry.
And
it?
Yeah,
it
and also disappears. The thing with Riesling, which is why it is one of the white noble grape varieties, is Riesling can be quite sweet, but it has really, really tight acidity so that it can age really, really well. So the common theme is kind of pale colour, quite floral, quite light, quite bright, quite fresh. Fresh acid, low alcohol, and one of the reasons it grows very well in the Mosa where it's cold is it's got very hard wood. That's true. That is really true.
Now, Dr. Lucen's wine that we're trying, I think, sort of sums up Riesling in a glass because I've pretty much finished it.
Yeah,
and like
I can't tell whether that's dry or sweet.
What you mean.
It starts sweet, then it's dry, then it's sweet again.
It leaves the mouth very dry, but that's the acidity.
That could be the sort of sugary.
Almost sour.
But it's definitely got some sweetness on there.
I love it.
That's a very...
At first, it's really very tasty, very sweet.
It
just disappears.
I don't know what the residual sugar is on this, but I would say there's definitely a bit.
I think Dr. Lucen's been...
A spoonful of sugar.
That's been thrown.
But it's...
More sugar!
It helps the medicine go down and your trousers.
It's got almost like a savoury character that I think is quite distinctive of Moselle. I often think of it as like mushroomy notes sometimes on Moselle.
It's funny you should say that. I thought it was getting something a bit more musty and...
And maybe sort of orange blossom and honeysuckle. It's really pretty.
I like it.
Isn't it a wine that sort of went out of fashion? Wasn't it associated with sort of German hocks and all that kind of carry-on?
Yeah, it basically got sort of tarred with the same brush as sort of hocks, Liefermilch, Blue Nun, all made from grapes that weren't actually Riesling, like sort of cheaper grapes than that.
I think they suffer from the shape of the bottle.
Yeah, it looks so fashioned.
I think people will look at it and think...
Yeah.
I really like that, though.
I do as well.
I think it's...
You like the bottle or you like the
wine? Yeah, I like the shape of the bottle. I think it's stunning. I think it's much more elegant on a...
There's another German style that's quite similar, that's very dry.
White.
Begins with G.
Grüneveltliner.
Yes.
Ah. Which is Austrian.
Austrian, that's what I meant.
Yes.
Often get those two mixed up, don't you? Historically.
Yeah. So you've got Grüneveltliner, which is from some Austria. And that's slightly different. It's not quite as floral. It's not so aromatic.
But it's dry. In the summer, that stuff is amazing. Can you bring it out in next time?
Yeah, I might do an aromatics. I might do a Gruner and a Gewurz. And look at two kind of aromatic ones. Yeah. And also another thing about Riesling, if you're someone who doesn't like oak or oaked whites, then, I mean, I don't think I've ever come across an oaked Riesling in my life. So basically, if you like low alcohol, floral, slightly off dry, fresh, crisp, even if it's got sweetness in, if you've got light, nice acid, then a Riesling could be for you. Now let's try the...
Yeah, let's do the other one.
8.5 as well.
Is it an Aussie? Is it the other one, the Aussie?
But is there any reason why, like, the Australians have put it in a similar shaped, tall, long-necked bottle?
Well, sorry, that was what I was sort of getting at. Is there a set of rules and regulations?
Is there a reason why that's the case, or it's just to distinguish it?
It's just to distinguish it. Like, in Australia, you don't have rules and regulations. Of course you do.
The Riesling isn't like a geographically protected style of wine that you have to make according to.
So they obviously do have rules and regulations. You know, for example, in a Sauvignon, you can put Sauvignon on the label, but it doesn't have to be 100% Sauvignon. There can be a little bit of other things in there. So they have their own rules and regulations to govern kind of quality and whatnot, but it's not nearly as prescriptive as in Europe. And I would suggest that the reason they put it in this bottle is to show it's an aromatic variety. It's instantly identifiable on the shelf as an aromatic because it's in this flute. This is £14, from Sainsbury's.
You're stepping up. Well, thank you for buying
nice one.
Thank you, Sainsbury's.
McGuigan's.
Can you see that it smells quite different?
Absolutely. So where I sensed sweetness coming
you can't
here,
get
it's much
at
more
all.
Savoury,
yeah,
isn't
and,
it?
And actually in Australia, Riesling's really trendy. They have a lot of oriental food. They've got a big foodie wine culture. And the Australians will drink, I think, sparkling wine and Riesling in a way that we just don't drink it over here.
That's really nice.
So this is from the Eden Valley. So it's in the south of Australia near the Barossa Valley. And Eden Valley and Clare Valley are known for Riesling.
Have a drink.
Yeah, good idea.
It's much more balanced.
I can imagine in more temperate weather.
This would be amazing, right?
Drinking it in early February is probably not at its... That's not the time to drink it.
Another thing as well is the interesting thing. So if you had a blind tasting and you had these two wines next to each other, someone like myself
yeah.
should be able to identify the two of them quite easily because of the low alcohol, the lack of oak, the acid, the sweetness in the first one. And then on this one, I don't know what you guys think, but it's got, and I wrote this down because I couldn't remember it, they have these kind of aromas of petrol and kerosene, which is a well-known tasting term.
When I first smelt it, I thought, you know, sometimes you go to a petrol station and a bit later you'll be like, and you've spilled some petrol on your
You'd only put diesel in that van.
Yeah.
In the post office van.
Yeah.
So, yes, I said before, resins high in flavour compounds called monoterpenes, which are the floral aromas. But apparently this kerosene aroma, which you can get on this one, is from something called TDN, which is a hydrocarbon. It's called 116 trimethyl 12 dihydroapatheline.
I think fine. It's not 112, it's 113.
But no, it's quite interesting because it's obviously shows that there's all kinds of science and chemistry. To
I'm amazed actually. You say if you tasted those next to each other, that is, I mean, I don't want to just blow smoke up your backside, but that is quite impressive because they are, I would probably,
very different.
I would have them next to each other and then I'd have to go back to the first one and say, that might be a dessert wine because it's completely different. This is like a really dry white wine. This is what I'd have as an aperitif, and the other one, I'd feel more like I could have
that would be great with a curry
food or after.
This would be.
Well, it's easy to drink, isn't it?
When I'm buying the Riesling,
I'm nailing it.
When I'm trying to buy Riesling, I'm always paranoid because it's so easy to get the wrong one. But I do think that when I have got the right one, it's really
delicious.
Good value. As well, is it priced lower?
Oh my god, it's such good value.
But is that because it's hamstrung by this sort of association with all
I
those
think
Lee
it is because
before?
The really kind of sad thing, certainly in Germany, is everything's hand picked. You know, you've got these really steep slopes, so all the grapes are hand picked, they're kind of made kind of lovingly, the wines, but it is quite a cheap process. These wines, they're not kept in the cellar for long,
right, so
they're not going in expensive oak. You know, you've got the cost of obviously looking after the grapes and whatnot, and then hand picking, but then it's quite a simple fermentation. It's, you know,
okay, so
stainless steel, ferment it, out it goes into the bottle.
I think if you're comparing it to something like Chablis or something, which I would, am I right in saying that that would sort of suit a similar occasion, a Riesling and a Chablis?
Yes,
but
yes,
Chablis
would.
Is really quite expensive.
It is.
And whereas this just seems to be a kind of very good value.
Obviously, you can get a Chablis at the same price as that the shortlist Riesling.
Sure.
But they are the same. And you're more likely to have some oak on sort of Premier Cru level Chablis. And Chablis has that same raciness, tightness, tartness, a bit more honey. But basically, delicious
it's amazing.
Wines.
Well, I'm really pleased you brought those in, and they are. I'm going to get some of that McGuigan. I think that's
it's good, isn't it?
Yeah. You've actually converted
if
me.
If McGuigan are listening,
they can.
I know you've had the love already, but
McGuigan.
I love Neil.
Give me
Brian.
Give me some free booze,
and I think they should send a couple of cases to us.
A testament to that tasting is the fact that we've pretty much got empty glasses. We've sculled it. Thank you very much, Sam. That was brilliant.
Pleasure.
And enough lubrication to get us all ready for Ben now, who's going to give us a legend of liquor. And Ben, tell the listeners, who are we going to
well,
hear
Well, lubrication
about today?
Is a rather apt introduction, Tom. I don't know if you did it deliberately, because we are going to Amsterdam's Red Light District. Anyway, if you go to Amsterdam, before I start, the Eurostar is soon to open a service that goes straight from London to Amsterdam,
right through.
How long will it take?
I think it takes about 3 hours. I mean, you can get to Amsterdam.
It'd be better to just build a new tunnel, wouldn't it? Direct, because I'm assuming...
from Hull?
Yeah.
No.
Not Hull. I love Hull. Hull.
Not there, though. No, my legend of liquor, ladies and gentlemen, is... Well, firstly, you're a star to Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. Amsterdam, if you're into beer, is arguably one of the greatest beer cities at the moment. It's brilliant.
Why don't we go on a company jolly?
We should do.
And they've got great gin.
They don't do wine.
Huh.
But Amsterdam's great beer town. Loads of really good breweries cropping up. But one that's been there for a while is called the Brail Brewery. Oh. And it is run by a guy called Furcock. Which sounds like something you get after a visit to the Red Light District. But in fact, it's not. He's a very nice man.
No, I don't.
So
I'm on board.
I mean, good.
Don't get me wrong.
So
I'm just reading too much.
So Fur and
I just realised Ben's poured himself.
Yeah, I'm going for it.
Socking great big glass of the Riesling.
Yeah,
why not? McGuigan, I love you.
These guys. So in 2002, he set up a brewery called De Prail with his mate Arnu.
Arnu Cook?
Arnu Coy.
No. His brother?
No.
Oh, I thought you said his brother.
No, his mate.
Oh, okay.
Did I say his brother?
No, I wasn't listening. I was too busy drinking wine.
Right, listen, I'm going to start this again. So Arno and Fur are brewers, but they were formerly two psychiatric nurses. And they're very nice guys. And their job...
And they're brothers.
No, they're not fucking brothers. They are just colleagues. They're just mates, right?
Who make, why have they got different names if they're brothers?
Why have they got the same surname?
They have not.
Two one's cocks called is better than one.
Furcock and Arno Coy, all right?
No!
Yeah. Your corrections are undermined by the fact that you admit you're not listening. Okay.
I am.
I'm all ears.
Right. I knew they weren't both called cock.
No. So. But okay, so they started a brewery in 2002 because at the time they were psychiatric nurses and home brewers.
Mm-hmm. Did they meet at work?
Yeah, they met at work.
Well, they lived in the same house. They grew up. They're home brewers.
Brothers.
They shared a bedroom.
Well, okay, they are brothers. These two brothers, right? They started this brewery in 2002 called the Prowl. They're psychiatric nurses, and their job was to get their clients, their patients, into some kind of work to...
Oh, brilliant.
Integrate them back into society. And basically it was stuff like they were making furniture, repairing bikes, baking breads, and they sort of get them placements, but they were temporary placements, and they were sort of so people would do all right for a bit, and they'd get a bit of a lift from their troubles.
But then have to try and find somewhere else.
And then find somewhere else, and there was no sort of longevity to it. But on, you know, out of work, they were home brewing for mates and stuff like this, and then they decided that they set up a brewery, and everyone who works in the brewery is someone who suffers from some kind of mental illness of some description.
I assume they get paid.
They get paid. I mean, I don't think they get paid loads.
Still, they're getting employed.
It's Holland, so it's all part of a, you know, a social
welfare scene,
which is very well funded. And so you go to this brewery in Red Light District, and they're surrounded by temptation, debauchery.
So they have people with alcohol problems?
Massively, yeah. Lots of people there who've for some reason or other, have got alcohol dependency on it.
What, so, who work in the brewery?
Yeah, so the whole thing is, well, your first question as well, is that a good place for them? And their answer is a very valid one in so much as they say, well, everyone we know who works for us, we have a file on them, we know exactly if any of them have got an alcohol dependency. And we know that, whereas most employers, if you've got employers who drink too much or have an alcohol, they can hide it very well. There's a myth that if you work in a brewery or distillery or winemakers that you're allowed to drink whilst you're working.
Yeah. The irony, of course, is, as we know from all the brewery tours we've been on, it's quite, how can I put this and still sound like I care about our subject? It's quite a dull process, isn't it? It's quite a manufacturing process. There can be romance written around it, as we know. Yes. We do have to write some serious bullshit. It's quite a sort of staple manufacturing process.
So absolutely. And what the beauty of this is that there's guys there who are working on the bottling line. There's the brewer who, I think the brewer, when I went, and this was quite a few years ago, he was highly aspergic, which, given what a brewer's skills are, it's actually quite beneficial because it's an attention to detail. Yeah. It's not going off in different tangents. They know exactly how a beer is brewed consistently. And the beers they brew are fantastic. They're really good beers, so it's not a chance.
Do you know how many people work there?
There are hundreds. Some people come in for like one afternoon a week. The environment there...
It's
really
nice
and it's really community. It's a safe place for them. But they're also, people are getting loads back from it because it's not a charity. Mm. Well, it is a charity, but the beers that they're making can stand up against anything else that's being brewed in Holland and elsewhere.
And what's it called again? What's the name of the brewery?
De Prale. Now, you used to be able to get the beers over here. They used to be named after famous Dutch singers. Mm. And one was called Willie, one was called Johnny. And then there was quite a few rude ones, but they've actually got rid of them and the names and just replaced them with the styles. You can't get the beers over here, but if you go to Amsterdam, it's a good excuse to go to Red Light District. You can say, look, I'll be back in an hour. I'm just going to go and see some charity. But the beers are really, really, really good, and it's a really cool
lager
bar as well.
Lager-type beers?
IPAs, triples, mostly Belgian in style, but they've also got American accent as well. We've been to loads of breweries, and they're great. The story is often like we started home brewing, then we started a brewery, and now we're doing really well. And our beers are really nice.
But that's a massive USP. I remember that.
But the best thing is, that they don't play on it. There's nothing on the bottle.
And how do you spell it? For people who might listen to might want to Google
D-E,
it.
D-E, one word, and then the second word is P-R-A-E-L.
Well, when the Eurostar gets there in 3 hours,
yeah,
sign me up.
Just go.
Love it. I'm going to Google that.
Yeah, fair play. That is,
but they're really good. They're really nice bit, and they're very nice guys, and are doing good stuff. And the more you drink, the more more help. I think the alcohol industry as a whole could do probably a bit more in
kind of community care.
Yeah, it helps the industry, doesn't it? Because when it's under pressure, it's a nice thing to do.
I spoke to the people who are working there, they're just saying, if it wasn't for this, I'd be in a terrible way. And they've only ever had to sack two people. One was smoking a spliff whilst working there, which is not allowed, even in Red Light District. And the other one was stood in a big bucket of water and sticking his finger in his socket. So Furcock went, he had to go, because that is quite dangerous.
That is bad. That's a less amusing note to end on. It certainly beats the hell out of a legend of liquor that was a horse. So well done. Well done, Ben.
Thank you very much
for listening through all of that, listeners. Please tell all your friends. We need more listeners. Please do follow us on Twitter, @ Thinking Drinks. Sam, you're...
At the Mistress of Wine.
Yeah, so follow us on Twitter.
Or even at Mistress of Wines, actually.
@ Mistress of Wines. Know your social media. Yeah. Sam, come on.
And before we go, this podcast will be going out on the Friday. So if you are listening in the London area...
Which is
London Luton area, which is part of London, according to the airport.
Well, Luton
is part of London.
You're going to talk about tickets to our show. Yes, so there are still some tickets to our show.
Yeah, so come to Luton. If you live in London, it's a very short trip to Luton. There's a couple of tickets left. But if you want to come to our show in Reading on a Saturday, you can't. Bad luck.
We've sold out. But you can come and see us in Chipping Norton on the 17th of March.
It was nice there.
David Cameron, come on.
On Saturday Kitchen this
Saturday.
Sam's
going to be on Saturday Kitchen, so tune into that on BBC One on Saturday
10
morning, 10 o'clock. And we are going to be in London on the 14th of April at the Underbelly. Now, this is a big venue to fill, so please buy tickets.
It's really fucking embarrassing
That's one of the worst things we've got ahead of us, because there's a lot of tickets to sell there. So please come and see us there, watch Sam on the telly, and tune in next week. Thank you very much for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. Drink less, drink better, and we'll see you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye. This was a Grand Cru podcast from 7 Digital.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.